Hello there, my name is Thomas and thank you very much for downloading this episode of British Culture, Albion Never Dies. I'm back in Britain and this is part two. If you've seen my Instagram or if you've seen my YouTube channel, then you can probably imagine the environment that's all around me. I am in a winter wonderland. It's the last day of March, it's very, very beautiful and what is it? Snow everywhere. It's up in the Dales of West Yorkshire and everything's just coated in this white stuff that I did see in California. I had to do it. I ran up to the mountains. Well, the wife drove me up to the mountains. And then we ran around in the snow and then we went down to the coast and I ran out into the sea. It was a bit bracing, not going to lie, but you had to do it because there's that Fawlty Towers episode where Basil is being driven absolutely nuts by one of his guests talking about the wonders of California. Oh, you can go swimming in the morning and skiing in the afternoon. And he goes, that must be tiring. So as I was in California, I had to do it. So that was the last time I saw snow, I think. Yeah, I got some excitement yesterday. There was flurries of snow. So I rushed out and, it was just landing and melting. But it's been snowing all night. So there is a few inches. A respectable amount. So I couldn't resist going out for a walk. I've got a good hat on, a good jacket, good gloves. Very, very important. And a nice cup of tea and a thermos. So I've just been enjoying walking about in the snow. It's been an interesting week, meeting up with old friends. One of them took me along to a fascinating art exhibition in Bradford, which is all about teenagers growing up with the pandemic. Really, really interesting. A local artist had worked with high schoolers, secondary school students for the last 2 years and had them do kind of little art projects all about what it's like to be a young person under lockdown, the teenage experience. It was really, really interesting. Again, I'll probably put those pictures out somewhere, but they were doing pictures, letters. I quite like one of the letters said that I miss everybody from school that I like. I even miss all the people I don't like. I thought that was really, really, I don't know, very cool. So that was a fantastic exhibition. Managed to get there on the last day. Then went down to see Kane. Kane in Fujo has been with us for a few deep dives and we just met up in a pub and had a little chat. So first of all, here is the little chat with Kane. It is a bit noisy. There's the authentic experience of being in a British pub. It's about 10 minutes. I hope you enjoy it. As I say, we have a quick natter about, well, what it's like to be two British men in a British pub. So it's about 10 minutes. Oh, I couldn't resist. I say, I was in the city, Derby, so I couldn't resist picking up a local newspaper. I don't know much about Derby, but I really like some of their stories. So that comes after the interview. Enjoy. Hello, welcome to part two of Back in Britain, and I'm in a pub. What could be more British than a pub setting? And I'm with my friend Kane.
Hello, everyone. Nice to be here.
And there's something special about British pubs, isn't there?
It's something that you and I have both obviously travelled quite a lot, and maybe not so much these days, but in our youth we did like a bit of a drink. So I think we've been in a lot of some drinking establishments, and there is something I think unique about British pubs. I don't think it's necessarily though to do with the kind of built environment, because I think to a lot of North Americans, if you say British pub, that's what comes to their mind, is the fact that the built environment is different. It's in a really stereotypical sense, it would be the open fireplace, the wing-back leather chairs, the old, stained oak, and so on and so forth. And certainly there are many pubs like that. The pub we're in at the moment is a little bit like that. I wouldn't say it's super traditional in its design. I think...
And if you take the cartoonish version of The Simpsons and Family Guy, you must have a picture of the Queen in every pub, though you have to have a picture of fox hunting, which, in a lot of British
they
pubs
actually do.
Outside the UK.
Yeah.
But here, I don't see any of that stuff. It's just...
We do have a fireplace here, although it's not on at the moment. And we do have some leather chairs. But yeah, it's not over the top in terms of its stereotypical element. But I think what makes... British pubs a bit different is really the way that they're used by the patrons. So I know, obviously I haven't been all over North America, but I have been to a few states in the US, and I did spend some time in Canada, And what I found is that drinking establishments, you know, they're almost, not exclusively, but most of the time, it's a nighttime occasion, right? That's when somebody goes to a place where they serve alcohol. It's a place where you can meet people, maybe have a dance, maybe not. Sometimes the music is loud. It's I don't know exactly how to say it, but it's a bit more of an event. Let's say that. It's a bit more of an event. At least that's the sense I get. And North American listeners, please feel free to contact Thomas and tell him if we're wrong. And again, when I'm travelling in East and Southeast Asia, I would say it's a similar thing. In China, for example, actually most drinking is done in restaurants. Yeah. Right? The concept of a place where you'd only drink is quite new in China. In the UK, I would say that a pub is almost like a community front room, a community living room. So, you know, pubs open in the morning, right? I mean, I think that's something that...
I used to regularly go for pub lunches.
Yeah, I remember talking to Chinese friends and they'd been surprised at the fact that, you know, most pubs open about 11 o'clock.
Yeah.
And some of the pubs, particularly some of the bigger chain pubs, Weatherspoons, for example, open at like 8, 9 in the morning. Yeah. Not all of them serve beer at that time, though. Some of them will not serve beer until like lunchtime, but plenty of them do. Although I wouldn't suggest, well... I don't know, if you find yourself drinking in a pub at 8 a.m, you might want to have some ask yourself some questions, right? But yeah, I think that's the kind of big difference, is the way in which people use them, is that it's a bit more like a community front room. Yeah. It's a place that's open to everyone. I mean, the name pub, of course, means public house, right? It's open to everyone. You can go in, you can have a couple of beers, you can have a chat. You know, it stays open late, but they can be just as good to go to in the day. And I think that's what makes them unique, more than the architecture or the design, although certainly we do have some really great beautiful pubs, you know. And the fact that the UK is an old country and we've had pubs for a long time means that we get to enjoy it
far back in history, and the idea was that it is a safe place for travellers to go, be put up, and it was just safe.
And I mean, I'm not trying to underplay the, you know, the great, you know, built environment of pubs. I don't know if built environment is the right word, but you understand what I mean. Interior decor and exterior decor, I suppose. Definitely we have loads of really nice pubs, right? The pub we were into today, actually, for lunch. Don't worry, listeners, we haven't been drinking all day. We've mostly been eating in pubs. But the pub we were in today is a converted old bank. It's very grand, right? A really nice building.
It's gorgeous. Full-size paintings of people like George Nathaniel Curzon, great figures of history and of this city, right?
Yeah, exactly. And they had the really nice like snugs, right? With leather seats and stuff. So we certainly have this. We're down the road, actually. We're recording this. We've met up in Derby. So we're down the road from Nottingham, and Nottingham has a pub which lays claim to be the oldest in the country. It's the Ye Olde Trip to Jerusalem, and it's almost 1,000 years old. And the pub, the exterior of the pub in this sort of main area fits your idea of a traditional British pub, but it's actually built into caves, because the original pub was in the caves. Not because it's not so old that cavemen were drinking there. It's just that Nottingham has a lot of I don't know if it's sandstone or limestone. I'm not a geologist. Anyway, it has a lot of soft rock that people can build into.
But if you go there, you can still see cavemen drinking today.
Yeah, you can see people who look like cavemen drinking that. Now that's an extreme example, but we certainly have many pubs. You know, in the city we live in, we're walking distance from pubs that are in this pub, in fact, the building I imagine is probably 100 or more years old. It's just had a bit of a lick of paint on the inside. So yeah, I don't want to underplay the, you know, that really nice element, because I really like that. But the fact is, you can you could dress up a pub to look like a British pub, but it still wouldn't really be a British pub. Unless it's used, I think, as a communal front room, rather than just a place to go get smashed. Now, that's not saying people don't get smashed in British pubs. They very often do. But I think it's that sort of, community front room is what makes it a British pub.
I wouldn't take a child to an American bar, but I think I've been taken to
a
British
pub. That's
a good point,
I remember telling friends in China, my mum goes to pubs, you know, and people find that incredible, because the idea that in China somebody of my mum's age would go to a pub or a bar is just, it's unheard of. It's just not something that would happen. And to be fair, my mum probably wouldn't want to go to pubs in China. Although she may do, but you know, it's because of what a pub is in the UK. It's the kind of place your mum can go, or the kind of place, you know, your niece or nephew, 8, 9, 10 years old can go.
So I had happy memories playing in beer gardens and so on. It's not, but it's how it's being used, right?
Also, I suppose we should be careful not to look at it with rose-tinted glasses. Yeah. You know, there is plenty of drunkenness and debauchery that goes on.
Dodgy pubs and there's quiet country pubs.
Yeah, yeah. You know, I wouldn't want anybody to come to England thinking that every experience is going to be this idyllic, nice, friendly thing. And also, if you're the kind of person who wants to go out and get absolutely hammered, you know,
there are pubs available for that purpose.
Most pubs would allow you to a certain extent to get absolutely lathered. In fact, this is a little bit off topic, but when I was in Canada, one thing that I noticed, which I've never seen happen in the UK, and I worked as a bartender in the UK for many years, is in Canada they call it cutting people off who are drunk.
Yeah.
So basically, if you go to the bar, and by the way, it never happened to me. I was never cut off for being drunk, which doesn't necessarily mean I wasn't drunk. I suppose it just means I wasn't so drunk that I couldn't, you know, order a beer. But basically, if you go to the bar and you're drunk, the bartender will refuse to serve you, and they'll say, sorry, I'm cutting you off. I've never in my life heard of that happening in the UK, and certainly in all my years of working in bars, I've never cut anybody off.
At a closing time at a pub, and there was one person who got very, very drunk and fallen asleep in a chair, and they tried to pull him out, and he slowly slid down onto the floor, and it was just him and myself and a group of six mates, and we were just watching this hilarity as all the bar staff had to come around and try and pick him up. And it was a good comedy moment, 5 minutes as they tried to carry him out, and then the staff were just at the door, just got him out, and then one of us went, everybody get down on the floor. They chased us out.
You know, I just wanted to be clear, we don't want to paint the wrong image every pub in England is just some nice, peaceful place. No, there's plenty of drunkenness and debauchery, although not that we're engaging in it.
Not right now.
And that isn't a joke, by the way, listeners. We genuinely genuinely just had some food.
There's different pubs, there's different times.
Yeah, and again, I mean, that's perhaps an illustration of how pubs are in the UK, is that we've been here for a couple of hours, we've had food and no drinks.
Yeah.
Well, we've had drinks, no alcoholic drinks.
It's Heineken 00, right?
That I've had some non-alcoholic beer. Yeah. And you've had an apple ties or something similar.
All classes of people come to a pub. There's nobody too posh to come to a pub, and there's nobody who can't go, right? I mean...
Yeah, well, I imagine there's some people that they wouldn't let into a pub.
Maybe glass collectors.
Yeah, you'd have to be... they're very inclusive and welcoming places, I suppose. You will get all sorts of people. In any normal pub in a city, you could have somebody who's quite literally a millionaire, and then somebody who's, you know, earning minimum wage and just wants a drink on his way home.
Which is an unusual, class system is very important in the UK, right?
Yeah.
So it's an unusual shared space between all people.
Yeah, and the interesting thing is that there are all of these kind of unwritten rules, pubs, right? The fact is, I've said this before, the one place you'll see British people routinely not queue is in a pub. You don't see a queue to the bar, do you?
No,
that's partly because every good bartender has in his head a mental queue, and you rely on the bartender to serve you in the order in which you approach the bar. But the fact is, it is noticeable by the fact that it is the one place in the UK where people will not queue at all, there are all these kind of unwritten rules that I suppose keep it this, you know, open, hopefully friendly, inclusive kind of environment that anybody can come in and have some fun.
Okay, I think that concludes it, and it's time to get another drink. Non-alcoholic. Okay, so after that last conversation with Kane, in which he mentioned that the oldest pub in England might well be in Nottingham, I happened to be passing through Nottingham, so I made a little detour, first of all, to see the statue of Robin Hood, which, I mean, it's not an epic impressive thing, it's just the one commemoration in the city to Robin Hood. I think there may be a corner of a museum somewhere to him, but it's not really made a big thing of here in Nottingham. But anyway, I had to see that statue, because when I was working in China, I was manager of an education centre, and in our materials we actually had that statue in our materials, so I couldn't resist swinging by just to see it in real life. I've seen it so many times in our adult education classes, so I had to see it. And then just down the road is Yoli Trip to Jerusalem, which is claimed to be the oldest in England, founded in 1189 AD. According to the sign in front of me, it's kind of carved into the city walls, into the rocks and so on. So it's got had a quick run around inside, lots of little nooks and crannies. It looked really cool. But now I'm just sitting outside. It's a nice day. This is just all my time is spent in pubs, but I did travelling around. It's just a nice place to
to stop by, and it is a historic thing. I know there are a few competitors out there. This is said to be one of the strongest competitor for the title, oldest pub in the UK. It does say Ye Olde, of course. That's just how they spelled the old trip to Jerusalem. The ye looks like a Y, but is in fact it's a hangover from the Viking days. It's the rune Thorn, which is kind of similar to a Y, similar to an X, and then in modern typeface we just use Y. So that's why you see Ye Olde. Nobody referred to it as ye. It was the. But it's a funny thing how it came into the language. It's one of those organic things, and then people use it to be old fashioned. So it was the old trip to Jerusalem. Yeah, very cool, whitewashed on the outside. I'll be posting some pictures to Instagram. But well worth just dropping by. I say nothing amazing, nothing stunning, except the heritage, the feel. I've been to lots of replica like British pubs around the world and replica British towns, but it's hard to capture the original. Perhaps because, as Kane mentioned, it's how people use it, it's how people behave. This is just a common ground for everyone. I say I'm just walking around, and this is just a nice place to stop. Enjoy the little garden, sun streaming in, the old medieval walls, the very, very old pub. Yes. Certainly one of the oldest pubs in the UK, I say. It's got painted all over it. The oldest inn in England, so may well be. I'll give them the benefit of the doubt, since it's such a nice day and I'm having such a nice time sitting here. But soon I'll be on my travels again. I just dropped down to see Kane, so I'm going to be on my way back up to Yorkshire, away from Derbyshire. Cool little place to stop by. Okay, I'm back in my friend's home. The cats are running around. I think that was the most popular aspect of my last Slice of Yorkshire Life episode, was the cat meowing in the background. He even had one person messaging me his impression of the cat, which was very, very impressive. But they're free, they're running around, so they may make an appearance. Brace yourself, they might not. But it's not a Slice of Yorkshire Life, it's a Slice of Derby Life. Yeah, I picked up a local newspaper to read on the long, long journey back, and there's two stories on the front page. One, Dame Margaret hailed a trailblazer. So this is Dame Margaret Beckett, who announced very recently that she'd be stepping down at the next election after, what was it, 40 years of service in the House of Commons. And the other one was two local heroes who answered call of duty, two policemen, PC Steve Reed and PC Ronnie Corbeil. So yeah, I'll go first of all to the one that's perhaps the most familiar to UK listeners, which is Dame Margaret Beckett. First elected to the House of Commons in 1974, when she was elected as the MP for Lincoln. She's now the MP for Derby South, which is why it's in this local newspaper. 4 decades of resolute dedication to Derby South has made her a legend of our party, said Keir Starmer, the current leader of the Labour Party. She announced her decision on Twitter. It comes after the death of her husband, Leo, aged 95, in last December. She was the first female foreign secretary in the UK, and she was the caretaker leader of the Labour Party for 10 weeks in 1994 after the death of the then leader, John Smith. So she has the official title, first woman to lead the party. She has been asked if, if perhaps there should have been other female leaders, but she said, it's never been the right person at the right time. So she was foreign secretary, put in place by Tony Blair, and she held many different government positions until she left the cabinet for the final time in 2009, commenting, "There's just so much luck in politics." She was asked if she had advised children today to go into politics, and Dame Margaret said, "What I felt when I was considering being an MP is equally true today. If you think things should be changed, and you want to have a say in changing them, and you don't have wealth and power, there's a very limited number of routes you can use, and this is the biggest of them." I found that really interesting, that the House of Commons is still full of people from very, very ordinary backgrounds. Of course, there are those from wealth and privilege, but there are also those from very, very ordinary backgrounds who've just worked very, very hard to get to where they are in the driving seat of government. And of course, they still have to, even as a foreign secretary, she still had to represent Derby South, so she had that twin responsibility, and the paper is just full of what a fantastic job she has done and what an inspiration she is to everyone. That other story on the front page, heroes answer call of duty, brave officer left with permanent scars after being knifed in the face. Two courageous Derby police officers, one of whom suffered horrific slash wounds to the face, have been commended for their bravery after they detained a drug-fueled knife man. PC Steve Reed and PC Ronnie Corbeil raced to the Slack area of the city after receiving reports of a robbery. When they arrived, Richard Jefferson was armed with a fearsome knife, knocking on doors, terrifying the neighbourhood. The officers approached him, and as they did so, the 40-year-old lashed out with a blade, leading P.C. Reed with two life-changing deep cuts to the face. P.C. Corbeil, who at the time was a newly qualified officer, watched in shock before helping other officers who had just arrived to get Jefford detained. Now the pair have been handed high sheriff awards for the professional and brave way they took control of the situation. Speaking at the ceremony held at Derby Council House, P.C. Corbeil said, "The envelope telling me I was getting the award was sent to work, and when it arrived, I saw what looked like a formal solicitor-type stamp on the envelope, and I thought, what have I done, and that I might be in trouble. When I opened it, I saw what it was. I was very surprised and excited to receive it. It is a great honour and something I'm very, very proud of." The coward Jefford, as he's described in the newspaper, is of course now in prison. And the two police officers, as I say, have been commended by the High Sheriff of Derby. Good to see the focus on the police officers there, I think, especially as they were doing such good work, such sterling work against a dangerous individual. I do like that. And local newspapers are often really good at doing that. Another highlight of a local citizen, homeless Denise, got more than just a house. She got a purpose too and a published book to her name. I really like this. A woman who was once homeless and went on to become a published author has paid tribute to the work of the Derby Housing Trust for helping her turn her life around. Denise Bowles from Ilkeston, who without support from Deventio Housing Trust, she would not be where she is today in full-time, paid employment, no longer on state support, and with a published book to her name. Deventio found her a home, but also helped her to find a purpose for its initiative, Growing Lives Project. He loves working on these projects. For example, the Growing Lives project, we can see her doing a bit of gardening. Growing Lives helps people by giving them positive activities to increase their confidence. Oh, I really like that. Although it doesn't say the name of the book. I have to look up. What's her name? Denise Bowles. Okay. Have a little look at that later. In the last Slice of Life episode, I had some drug stories and some driving offences. Always a joy for local newspaper. Here's one that combines both. Addict driver mounted curb outside school so he could detox in prison. A driver in the grip of a hard drug addiction mounted a curb outside a school in a deliberate attempt to get arrested so he could deal with his issues in prison. Pedestrians leapt out of the way when all four wheels of Luke Carlisle's silver BMW mounted the pavement as parents collected their children. Carlisle then dangerously overtook several vehicles during a police chase. The 38-year-old had been spotted behind the wheel of the BMW whilst disqualified on September the 21st and led police on a pursuit in Sherbrooke, prosecutor Stephen Fox told Derby Crown Court. Oof. He's got what he wanted. He is now in prison. He's in Her Majesty's Prison, Lincoln, from where he appeared via a video link. But the lawyer said his client was feeling an awful lot better, and I discovered that if you ask for help, things get better. Oof. Sorry he needed to do that to learn that lesson. I say I'm reading this out from the Derby Telegraph, and the centre page spread is a stroll around our city back in 1982. And having just wandered around that city centre and looking at the pictures here, I must admit there's a slight element of spot the difference here. But it does, of course, refer to the prices being so much lower back then. A loaf of bread would set you back 28.5p, and you could wash it down with a packet of Thai food tea at just 20.5p. Prices have gone up. Even I can remember going into a shop with just a few pounds in my pocket and I could get, you know, a packet of cigarettes, a lighter, beer, crisps, and you can't do that now because, you know, security cameras everywhere. Right, there's not much else except the vital, vital horoscope right at the back of the newspaper. And, yeah, it's an exciting week for me. I am, of course, Aries, vital information for the podcast. My birthday's April the 13th. Don't need to write that down, but it's just nice that I've got a job interview coming up on April the 13th. So right now I'm in a bit of a dilemma whether I should mention it at the job interview. Do you think that would help? Do you think that would hinder? I don't know. Is it too much to try and shoehorn that information into a job interview? Do you think it would help? Let me know what you think. Anyway, let's see what Russell Grant of the Derby Telegraph says for me, Aries. Everyone seems to be pushing ahead to achieve a goal and you worry you'll miss out if someone gets there before you. Don't be in a rush. Make the most of what is in the here and now. There's more going on around you than you might realise when you're focused on just the one area. Wow. What can I say? The one area I'm really on my mind is, of course, finding a job locally. So I can hopefully settle here, but But I am trying to branch out by obviously recording this podcast, and of course there's more coming up on my YouTube. Thank you to everybody who's been watching the 007 drink series on youtube.com/British culture. I just had my first video get more than 1,000 views. I think it's like 1,200 if you're interested. Check it out. But again, a huge thank you to everyone who has watched it, especially people who've commented and joined in a conversation. I found, the comments really, really interesting. The different types of whiskey people use for this, and bourbon use for this drink, the mint julep. And again, thank you so much to everyone who shared it. I really appreciate that. So that was Back in Britain 2 and a slice of Derby Life. I will be getting on to the Alphabet series. I've got a few other shallow dives coming up, and maybe an interview or two coming up, so plenty coming, but I will go back to the alphabet of Britishness. Thank you very much again to everyone who's messaged me. I'm kind of happy that I've left it so long, because I've got some late entries that are really, really cool, and I will be using them. So, thank you very much for listening. Goodbye.